Good evening and welcome to the WINS News Conference. I'm Alice Stockton. For Christians, Jews, and Muslims around the world, this has been one of the holiest seasons of the year. Passover, Easter, Ramadan. Our guests tonight are local religious leaders, Sister Camille D'Arienzo of the Catholic Archdiocese of Brooklyn, Rabbi Mark Tannenbaum of the American Jewish Committee, the Reverend Calvin Butts of the Abyssinian Baptist Church, and the Reverend Roy Lloyd of the Council of Churches of New York City. We're discussing the issues facing today's religious leaders, and in doing that, I would like to throw this out to you. Rabbi Tannenbaum, would you like to start with some of the issues that you feel are facing us today?
Well, Alice, I think what really brings us together is the fact that we share such deep traditions during this Passover-Easter period. For both of us, in differing ways, Passover and Easter are the seasons of liberation. They remind us of the slavery that our ancestors went through, the struggle for freedom and human dignity, and ultimate liberation, looking forward to what we call in our tradition the Passover of the future, in which all mankind will be relieved of poverty, injustice, hatred, bigotry, and will be joined together by love and compassion. I think those themes, both for Jews, Christians, as well as Muslims, are very powerful binding forces today which we need to renew.
Are we renewing them?
Well, I think in many ways, we're recognizing that the struggles are still massive, the challenges are still enormous, the injustices are very great. But I think what sustains religious people, perhaps more than others who don't have a religious tradition of Passover and Easter and Ramadan, is that there's always the sign of hope, springtime, renewal. No matter how great the evil and the suffering, there's always the opportunity to renew the world.
One of the major concerns of Easter is the victory over death. Passover also. The fact that those forces which have traditionally oppressed people have somehow been escaped. You see that in Eastern Europe, and in the recent trip that I had to South Africa, you see it beginning to happen there. One thing that the Easter season and the Passover season reminds me of is that there is, in fact, though, no salvation without the shedding of blood. So many people have given their lives across the years and centuries to make sure that human justice and human freedom are things that we cling to and things that will become a reality as each generation comes and goes. So in this season, as we remember those who suffered in bondage, whether in Egypt or those who suffered during the Holocaust or the Second World War, those who suffer anywhere in the world, we must remember that there were many who are not enjoying the freedoms that we enjoy today, but who did give their lives so that we could. And I think that's very important.
Sister?
And Reverend Butts, I would add to that that not only are there people who gave their lives in pursuit of justice and for the cause of justice, but there have always been and there continue to be people whose lives are taken from them because of injustice. And so when I look at the holy days that are upon us now and I reflect the wonderful themes already expressed here, I want to say in the tradition we go back to the beginning, to Genesis, and then we go back to the creation, to the beginning with the Word. And I think the Word is so important to bond us, to bind us, to heal us. The Word that exposes the injustice, the Word that gives hope and comfort, the Word that calls us to conscience, the Word that heals us and gives us promises that we can rely on. So I see the power of the Word not only in our faith tradition, but in the way we relate and don't relate to one another. That dialogue should continue among the different religions and with people who have none at all. That dialogue, the Word which is blessed and which is creation, life-giving, that never be aborted in any of the churches. That no one ever say we cannot talk about this. We must talk about it because in the beginning was the Word.
You know, I have to say that I come to this this season this year a lot more hopeful and optimistic than in some previous years. I don't know about you, but I do. Perhaps it's because we've seen some fulfillment of the things in which we put trust and hope. It's all well and good to plant the seeds or to see the seeds planted, but to see some of the results really, really helps. To see some changes happening in South Africa, to see that the changes are occurring in Eastern Europe, especially where some folks might have said, well, there wasn't much going on, or might have been willing to vilify what was happening. So I find myself a lot more hopeful. It doesn't mean that I'm happy with everything that I see, but in ways great, as I've just described, or small, like I mentioned in a commentary a week ago about a synagogue and a church getting together, the young people, a predominantly black congregation with a synagogue in the Forest Hills section, getting together to share a mock seder, to think about what it means to be liberated and what it means to value each other. I mean, on those small ways, those are big ways too. So I'm optimistic.
Reverend Butts?
I just want to say, though, as we look at our city, especially New York, we see thousands, hundreds of thousands of young men and women who are not equipped to deal with the coming world. Not equipped in terms of an education, not equipped in terms of having a healthy respect for authority, not even a healthy regard for tradition. And many of us, because of the overwhelming problem of drugs, the lack of discipline that we find among many of our young people, are willing to throw up our hands and say that there's nothing that we can do. And people have to continually be reminded that any process that seeks to help serve and save humanity is one that requires great sacrifice on behalf especially of those of us who put our faith in God. God's reconciling process, liberating process, whether it's in the tradition of Passover or Easter, required great sacrifice on the parts of those who were willing to heed God's call, whether it was Moses and the Hebrew children, whether it was disciples and especially the Christ. And for those of us who are Jewish and Christian and, yes, Muslim, we must be prepared to present ourselves as sacrifices for the benefit of all humanity. That theme echoes more and more for me, particularly as a Christian, as I see the Christ hanging on the cross, because it was a self-giving love that helped to save humanity. Or as I see a Moses looking into the promised land, but not being able to go, giving of himself completely with a group of people, often whimsical and capricious, fickle, if you will, but yet sticking with it, even if it meant the sacrifice of his own life. That's what Easter is saying to me. Those of us who have must sacrifice in order to ensure the liberation and freedom and health and justice for others.
Rabbi Tannenbaum.
That's a marvelous statement and a very moving statement. You know, some indication of the power. We're not talking about pieties when we talk about Passover and Easter. We're talking about powerful, transforming conceptions, images, which literally have changed the course of history and remain to change the course of history again. Just a minor example of the redemptive power, for me, of the Passover. Some years ago, I attended a Seder conducted by a Black Baptist church in Roxbury, Massachusetts. At the center of the Passover Seder, there's a plate that is held up. And into their traditional Jewish Passover foods, recalling the oppression in Egypt and the hope for redemption. And those foods consist of an arm of a lamb or a chicken in this case, to recall the sacrifice in the temple, of an egg, the universal return, and parsley, symbols of the spring. Well, in this church service, the black pastor replaced the Jewish Passover foods with the foods of oppression of black people in slavery, collard greens, ham hocks, those things which were so personal in expressing their slavery. And then the plate is held up, and it's a marvelous high point of the Seder service. we say in Aramaic, called Dechvin Yesevi, let all who are hungry come and eat with us. Let all who are poor come and share with us. This year we are slaves, next year may we be free people. It's that ambiguity of human existence that really is a universal condition. And I think in many ways we're all talking about our common humanity in that way, as well as our common spirituality.
Sister?
I'd like to respond to the theme of sharing, which is a form of sacrifice, which the two previous speakers mentioned. I think about self-sacrifice, not just in the great sense of being a martyr to a cause, but the sacrifice that costs on a regular basis. And I think especially when we are concerned with the children of our cities, how many people will condemn them, but how few will give of themselves in time. I think of the wonderful procession that Pax Christi sponsors every year along 42nd Street from Dag Hammarskjöld Plaza up to around 10th Avenue, where about 2,000 people reenact the traditional Stations of the Cross, as we have in our tradition, Jesus on the way to Calvary. A few years ago, one of the stops was at Bryant Park behind the public library, and the traditional station that was recalled was Jesus comforts the women of Jerusalem who cried when they saw his bent and bloodied person under the cross. The contemporary prayer was for children who don't have parks to play in because they're taken over by drug addicts and for people to give their time for recreational activities so that children will have a place. Well, that sounds so pragmatic. How can it be religious? Well, religion is most pragmatic. It's the relationship with God which brings us to love our neighbor in a practical way. And so I see that the Passion as we celebrate it in the Christian tradition continues. And the Lenten season, which just ended, and Easter Sunday, is a call to relieve the sufferings of those who continue to bear crosses, often not of their making. So it's renewal, and it has the theme of sacrifice and redemption. We must help do the redeeming. It's not over yet. It's not done once.
Well, it'll never be over.
You know, if I may make the comment that a central theme in Jewish tradition, both biblical and rabbinic, is that every human being is a co-creator. Every human being is a partner with God in the work of creation. And the work of creation is not completed. And our task of partnership with God is to help complete the work of creation. I just say one word. Roy, I know you were going to make a comment briefly. I mean, you know, sometimes people think of Easter and Passover, and I can speak most credibly about Passover, as a kind of family celebration. It's wonderful. You know, families get together, a lot of celebration, tremendous togetherness. And it almost becomes a kind of piety. It's almost a quality of enjoyment, excluding all else. But in point of fact, Passover and our tradition are commanding orders. I mean, they're the commands of the prophets. And it's the Exodus is to tell us how great the suffering was, and yet how great was the hope, and how Moses seized that hope to bring the people out. We look around the world today, indeed our inner cities, it is a scandal that in a city as wealthy as this, that what goes on in the ghettos, the indifference and the casualness, the trifling with that, what is happening with the drug culture and crime, it rises again. But it's not only there. On the international scene, I've been dealing with problems of world refugees, world hunger, now since the mid-60s. To go in refugee camps in Southeast Asia, Africa, Latin America, it is mind-boggling that the world can go on celebrating without being aware of the magnitude of human suffering that goes on today. Today alone, 40,000 children are dying of hunger every day in the year. 14 million refugees in the world. In South Africa, there are 2 million children starving every day. Mm-hmm. So while there is celebration, it is a celebration, in effect, to renew our energies to deal with the real world.
It's 10:15, and you're listening to the WINS News Conference. I'm Alice Stockton. Our guests are Sister Camille D'Arienzo of the Catholic Archdiocese of Brooklyn, Rabbi Mark Tannenbaum of the American Jewish Committee, the Reverend Calvin Butts of the Abyssinian Baptist Church, and the Reverend Roy Lloyd of the Council of Churches of New York City. We're discussing the issues facing today's religious leaders and facing all of us today. And I just wanted to make a comment, Rabbi Tannenbaum. I feel that there is just, people are overwhelmed. They don't know what to do. I believe that there are people out there who want to help. They want to help others. They want to help the homeless. They want to help the poor, but they don't know how, and they are so overwhelmed. In New York City alone, just walking through the Port Authority is overwhelming. How do I help? What can I do? I'm just one person. What can I do? And I mean, starting with just yourself and your own city and your own environment, let alone what's going on in South Africa and what's going on in Latin America, even Eastern Europe, you have people saying, yeah, that's a wonderful thing that's happening, but I tell you, people are waiting for the other shoe to drop. And rather than do anything, they do nothing.
There are too many examples, however, of people who do something. One person in our city who stands tall above so many of us is Mother Hale, who continues to respond to the horrors of inner city life and the horrors of drug addiction and alcohol addiction in our society. So she lights candles rather than cursing the darkness. And one other thing about Easter, I contend our churches are filled on Easter, filled to overflowing. We're filled every Sunday, but on Easter it's unbelievable. And people ask me, why do people come to church? And I say, they say they come to show off their clothing. I say, no. They come because it's Easter and they're not going to come any other time. I said, no. The main reason people come to church on Easter is to make sure that we're telling the same story. And here's Sister Camille's emphasis on the word. To make sure someone is saying that he did get up from the grave. Because what that means is, as long as that story is still being told, there's hope. And furthermore, it will not always be like this. That's the end of the story. See, we have the wonderful advantage of knowing what the end of the story is, that it will not always be hunger, that the land will one day flow with milk and honey, that the lion and the lamb will lie down together, that men will beat their swords into plowshares and spears into pruning hooks and study war no more, that the leaves on the trees will be good for the healing of the nation. And when people hear that over and over again, even if it's only on Easter, then they can go away and say, well, God has still got a plan for us. Now, they may never come back to church until next Easter, but they do that because that helps, first of all, to get them in the spirit of saying there's something that still can be done. And along the way, there are hundreds and thousands of stories in this city of people in little feeding programs, collecting clothes for those who are naked, people fighting to save a closing hospital, you know, or people doing something in their own way. We've got this campaign where we're painting over billboards. You would not believe. People get a little roller and a stick with a roller at the end and dip it in some paint and paint over a cigarette sign. They're involved for the first time, and they're happy, and they think they're doing something, and they are. And all of that counts, because if it was not for this, if you boarded up the synagogues, closed the churches, and pulled down the mosques, what would we have left? This is the essence of what keeps us going.
Let me just pick up on that.
Lloyd.
Yeah, because it seems to me that the essence of what we're talking about is it certainly goes beyond just the cognitive. You're talking about something that's made real as you live, and you were talking about how do you do something. You're overwhelmed, of course you are, but the only way that you can deal with something is on your own level, on your own one-to-one basis. Your church, Calvin, I mean, feeding people. Among the most important things that happens there is when elderly people come in there. I mean, there's some food, but they share companionship. Mm-hmm. They share each other's space and a touch that may not happen any other time. That's real, you see. That's why, despite all the things that are going on that we certainly can say are terrible, there are all those really millions of small stories. Now, of course, what we hear on the news are these terrible tragedies and the some of the awful things. I guess I've never understood why that's always the most important thing that needs to capture the news. But we know, each of us, the stories that are going on. And I can tell you, the idea of Passover became real for me about 16, 17 years ago when a good friend of mine, Shelley Horowitz, invited me to his home for the Passover Seder. And I was part of that family. I was accepted for who I was. And within that family and gathered in, and that to me should be a symbol of what we should all be talking about, Calvin, about the, telling the same story. That's a story, that we are a family, that we are a people, that we do share a gift and a promise, and that we have to make good on the hope.
Sister Camille.
Yeah, I'd like to pick up on a couple of themes. One is the sense of the co-creationism that Rabbi Tannenbaum introduced, and the sense of we are to continue being life givers. In the words of Jesus, I've come that you may have life and have it more abundantly. This against the backdrop of criticism and condemnation, which I think has too often occupied the best minds of religious leaders and religious people. I like to think about the church as the light in the darkness, the church, the synagogue, the place where people can go to be family, to be community, to be encouraged, that they can be their very best selves in confronting the real problems of their lives. And speaking of the distant ones, when this may be the case. And I think about a very important moment in my life when this notion took root in my own heart in a way that it can never leave. It was back in 1970, and I was at the University of Michigan, and it was in Detroit, when a priest who was a marvelous preacher and a great community person died suddenly of a heart attack at the age of 47. It was the lead story on the news out of Detroit because he was so well respected. And just responding to the terrible news, I got in my car and drove the distance into Detroit and went to the Church of St. Cecilia, which he had pastored. And it was an interracial congregation, and people were giving testimony to all the ways that he had known them and helped them and breathed life and hope into them. And as I was leaving the church that very hot June evening, a woman was running up the stairs and into the vestibule, and then she stopped short. There was no question about her occupation. She had on a red strapless mini dress, and she was heavily made up, although her face was terribly smeared from the crying. And I looked at her, and she looked at me, and I said to her, "Is there anything I can do?" And she said, pointing to the casket in which the priest was laid out in the center aisle of the church, "I want to go up there, but I can't like this." So I gave her my jacket, and she went down the aisle and stood there for a few moments, and then came back, tears still streaming down her face, and she handed me the jacket and said, "He was the only man who ever thought I could be more than what I am." And I've thought so many times that that is the work of religion, organized or disorganized, that we are the people who should say to our brothers and sisters who, like us, are incomplete and needing of redemption and needing of family and needing of healing, listen to God's love, listen to God's word. We can all be more than what we are. And then the whole city, the whole world might be a little better.
That's exquisite. Could I just make a quick point if we have a moment?
Yes, Rabbi
Tannenbaum. You raised the question about people being overwhelmed, not knowing what to do, when you ask about going through Grand Central, etc. And one of the remarkable things, I think Reverend Butts referred to it before, is that there's more going on than people are aware of.
Mm-hmm.
If one wants to do something about the homeless, caring about the elderly, the youth programs, go to any church or synagogue in this city and ask about what they're doing. I'm amazed, and I've lived here a long time. I was involved in a program, an interreligious program for the homeless. Actually, it was the first national interreligious program that was started by Episcopal Bishop Paul Moore and Reverend Carl Fleminster and others. And we began touring churches and synagogues in the area. It was a magnificent experience, and nobody knew about it. Day after day, people were feeding. You had Wall Street executives feeding homeless people, I mean, deprived, demoralized people, feeding them breakfast with such love and care. It did more for the Wall Street executive than it did for the homeless person. But it's there. Just to say this briefly, I'm amazed to find Catholic Relief Service does an absolutely exquisite program and almost all over the world. Most of the Catholics I talk to don't know about its work all over the country. Jewish Community has organized a program called American Jewish World Service, which is working in 27 countries in Asia, Africa, Latin America, in development programs, technical assistance programs. Protestants have Church World Service, Lutheran Relief Service. I mean, there are enormous programs that are just sitting there waiting for you to make connection with them. And they could always use the helping hands and the helping hearts that people bring to that. It's there. And all one simply has to do is pick up the telephone and call the church or synagogue that you belong to and ask about that. You will find a way to do something useful. You won't change the world. And the best can be the enemy of the good, but you can do an awful lot of good.
Yeah, there's a... I don't want us to ever forget, though, the power of evil in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what Passover and Easter helps us with. Evil always thinks, especially evil that has been endowed with tremendous worldly power, arms, guns, chariots, horses, money, that it can win. And... when you take a look at South Africa, who would ever believe that Mandela and his forces would be able to come as far as they've come against de Klerk or Botha prior to de Klerk with their tremendous military arsenal? You would look out at the drug problem and say, we'll never be able to overcome it. You'll look at the destruction of young children in our streets and say, how can we ever solve these problems? Passover says... to Pharaoh, who thought that he had all power in his hand, God is mightier. Easter says to the world of evil that crucified Christ and sealed him in a tomb, God is all powerful. And so that's what we say to people. You may think that you have nothing. You may think that you are powerless, but you have more than you realize. And if you believe in yourself and believe in the power of God throughout the ages, you can do anything. Absolutely anything, even defeat evil itself. And I think that's a tremendous message. I mean, you see Christ hanging on the cross, they had him. You seal him in the tomb, they had him. But then early Sunday morning, he was no longer there. And as long as people say he wasn't there, how did he get away? You know, what happened? I mean, how come just the firstborn of Egypt died? I mean, what happened? And nobody can explain it. You know, not chariots, not horses, but by my spirit, my spirit, saith the Lord. And so that's the story of Passover. It's the story of Easter, and it's the story that continues to give hope. And without that hope, the world would just fall apart.
So that can be the story of this city too.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
You see, and I mean, part of it is us sitting here enjoying each other's company and telling the story, but it's all of those people maybe who faithfully come every Saturday or Sunday or Friday evening, as well as those who just maybe show up at Christmas and Easter.
Oh, but would to God that the leadership of this city is attentive.
Mm-hmm. See, but I think that is really the challenge, Reverend Butts. There are many people of goodwill in Catholic, Protestant, Evangelical, Jewish communities, Greek Orthodox communities. The need is really to bring them together around common issues. As so much of our work is fragmented, isolated, there are some places we come together. But I think one brings together the resources, the intellectual resources, the moral resources, the practical know-how of how to reorganize neighborhoods, community organization, economic development in the ghettos and elsewhere. There are tremendous resources here. It's a matter of someone undertaking to catalyze that. And we're talking to people in the city government now about doing exactly that. It's got to be done.
And that's another news conference, because that's all the time we have for tonight. And you've been listening to a WINS news conference discussion on the issues facing today's religious leaders. Our guests have been Sister Camille D'Arienzo of the Catholic Archdiocese of Brooklyn, Rabbi Mark Tenenbaum of the American Jewish Committee, the Reverend Calvin Butts of the Abyssinian Baptist Church, and the Reverend Roy Lloyd of the Council of Churches of New York City. Thank you all for joining me tonight.
Yep.
This is Alice Stockton, 1010 WINS News.